Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you good morning, good evening, wherever the case, whatever the case may be. Across all these many time zones, stretching from Tahiti and the Hawaiian Islands to the U.S. Caribbean and the Virgin Islands, south into South America, north well to the pole. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll see what kind of trouble we can get into this morning. Live talk radio, because this radio station cares enough to have it on for you. Every now and then you ought to call them up and say thank you. Good to be here, and I thought about this all day before deciding to air it, but I'm going to air it. You may recall that we've had on the show a number of times Gordon Michael Scallion. Gordon Michael Scallion is an intuitive, visionary, whatever you want to call him, and in my view, the real McCoy. I've had several substantial conversations private with him over a long period of time now. And I invited him back on the program, a couple of weeks ago at your behest. And he sent me a letter, which I read to you, saying basically nothing has changed and my predictions for 1995 stand as on the previous program, which, by the way, you can get a copy of if you want to, and you probably ought to. And we'll give you a number to do that. Today I received a special bulletin from Mr. Scallion, and I'll read that to you in a moment. You may recall in his last recorded interview we did with Gordon Scallion, he said the one thing to watch most carefully for would be any activity at all on either Vesuvius, Mount Vesuvius in Italy, or Mount Etna. Now, Sunday evening on the CBS Evening News, some of you I'm sure saw it, which normally is with Dan Rather Sunday. I don't know. They have a replacement, somebody or another. They did a big story on Vesuvius. And an Italian geologist said there have been tremendous rumblings. And they believe Vesuvius is getting ready to let go. Now, originally, when Vesuvius buried Pompeii, and with it 25,000 people, well, it is still talked about, isn't it? Living beneath Vesuvius right now, there are 500,000 people, and there is a voluntary evacuation being called for. But the people are not leaving. Vesuvius is getting hot. Vesuvius is having multiple earthquakes. Today I received an interesting newspaper from Europe. And the headline is, Sicily on alert as Etna wakes. Tourists were warned to stay away from the summit of Mount Etna in Sicily. Authorities have appealed for calm as Europe's highest and most active volcano seemed to sputter back to life this week. Quote, a lively lava flow from the northern crater and copious amounts of ash were noted by the Sicilian authorities, but they hastened to add there was no immediate cause for alarm. Experts were immediately at the scene, monitoring the fumes and the lava flows. Faced with predicting the task of predicting when an earthquake will happen, seismologists can sometimes make mistakes. But right now they see a very great deal of activity going on with Etna as well. So there is now pre-activity with respect to both Vesuvius and Etna. And those of you who listened to the program way back when Mr. Scallion made that prediction will recall there was no such thing at that time. Score one, actually two, for Mr. Scallion. Now, I'm going to read for you word for word what I received from Gordon earlier today. Addressed to me for all of you. Special bulletin. Earth change activity continues to increase along the Ring of Fire. Already this year, the record, the record for the number of yearly earthquakes greater than 6.0 has been broken, and we still have 2 months to go remaining in this year. I have been warning since 1993 that I considered activity at, and I'm going to have trouble with this, Mount Pococatepe in Mexico, and I'm sure I slaughtered that, to be a precursor to quakes ranging and reaching magnitude 8.0 plus or minus 0.5 in the Mexico City region. On September 14th, a magnitude 7.5 earthquake in Mexico hit the Pacific coast, and October 9th, a 7.9 hit the same region. Pocatepe came to life in 1994 and is now, once again, active. I consider the recent activity in Mexico as the beginning of a three-month window for earth changes to occur along the west coast of the United States. Other events that send up early warning flares for me are the recent eruptions of volcanoes in Japan. These have triggered thousands of small earthquakes in that region and increased the risk that a major quake or blow-off may occur in the region shortly. If my window is correct, time may be short for this and other predictions to occur. The following is a summary of previously published Earth Changes Report predictions for the 1995-96 time frame concerning the U.S. The third cycle of the 1995-1996 four-quake scenario begins December 95, January 96. The first two cycles occurred as predicted. Quakes to occur along the west coast of the U.S. in a domino fashion. High-risk areas, epicenters or affected areas for quakes are Palm Springs, San Diego, Sonoma County, the San Francisco Bay Area, including Sacramento, Oakland, and San Jose. Some quakes will be greater than magnitude 8.0. Some seismic monitors will record earthquakes of 9 or greater. Will there be any other warning signs before these quakes hit? I am watching Japan, the Indian Ocean region, Mount Vesuvius in Italy, and the U.S. Cascades region very closely now. Major activity in any of these areas would indicate potential earth change activity to occur within weeks, perhaps days, along a line drawn from Vancouver, B.C. to Eureka, California, to San Diego, California. A final note. If you live in a high-risk area, it is better to be prepared. If a quake doesn't occur, it becomes a blessing, and you will be better prepared for when it does. Even the scientific community is now saying the, quote, big one, end quote, can occur now anytime. So there you've got it. There is the latest kind of sobering stuff, I would say, from Gordon Michael Scallion. It fits into a kind of a theory I have. I call it the quickening. Things are going on. Now, you can take that, and in the religious community, it will be said that there is no prophet save those that are 100% accurate. And that may well be. Mr. Scallion's rating is somewhere about 87%, I believe. I have been carefully tracking his predictions made here and elsewhere. And I say once again, Sunday when I saw the report on Vesuvius, my jaw hit my chest. This morning when I opened up the paper sent me and I read the headline, Sicily on alert as Etna wakes. And then when this arrived from Gordon, I felt that I ought to report it to you. So there you've got it, for what it's worth. There is an epidemic, a mysterious illness going on now in Nicaragua. It has now spread to Honduras. The mystery surrounding a deadly Nicaraguan epidemic deepened Tuesday when a leaked U.S. embassy document identified the disease as dengue. I believe that's correct. Dengue. Dengue. D-E-N-G-U-E. Meanwhile, neighboring Honduras reported that three people had died after exhibiting symptoms of fever, body aches, bleeding from the nose and gums, similar to those found in the Nicaraguan illness. The unidentified illness, which has symptoms similar to those of dengue, has killed at least 15 so far and infected 1,500. The Nicaraguan health minister told a news conference Monday that tests by U.S. Centers for Disease Control had ruled out dengue and yellow fever. So, in other words, they don't exactly know for sure what it is. But it is. And it's new. And it's infecting people. And it is spreading, for whatever that's worth. Other news, more domestic, really more palatable news. The budget passed by the Republican Congress, biggest cuts in the shortest time in all of memory. NBC did a poll last night saying 73% of you, or us, want a 10-year plan and smaller cuts. Only 22% of us want a 7-year plan and bigger cuts. NBC further says, their poll says, 61% of us say the president ought to wield his veto pen and cut this budget down in its cradle. I'm sure he will. Then, of course, the real talks will begin. The president, Gingrich, Dole, and company all met. No progress. Clinton reportedly told them, if you want your agenda, meaning the Republican agenda, passed, well, then you better elect a Republican president. I would imagine Mr. Dole just sort of mentally shook his head and said, right on, Mr. President. In late October, the debt limit will again come up, and Republicans are saying they're not going to let it be raised. All of that could lead to a possible default on the part of the government on its payback. And that, of course, would be, the train wreck that everybody is afraid of could happen. The Bosnian peace talks. All sides in Dayton shook hands. But I'm afraid that's it so far. No further agreement on anything. As a matter of fact, all sides, according to our negotiator, have toughened their positions. White House says before they send troops, they will need, listen to this wording, they will need or will desire an expression of support. Well, the president has a long way to go to get that, because right now the Wall Street Journal and NBC says that you say 65% oppose it, only 30% of you favor it. The U.S. proposes the following: a peace agreement, a division of territory, elections, refugees to return or be compensated, reconstruction aid, it's U.S. tax dollars, of course, and buffer zones to be created and then filled with 25,000 U.S. troops. It is the foreign policy military plan from hell, as far as I'm concerned. But I got another fax. We talked about this yesterday, and somebody said, bull feathers. George Bush went into Panama, a stupid mission, in the middle of the night. 25,000 troops to get one man out. He didn't ask anybody. I don't seem to recall Ronald Reagan asking to go into Grenada. Where was that big threat there? Well, in both cases, this faxer is correct. But he will recall we got the hell out of Panama very quickly, ditto with Grenada. We are projecting a one-year presence in Bosnia, standing between two forces that want to murder each other. And I think it's a lousy idea. Lousy. Boris Yeltsin, I told you this. A senior aide today told NBC television, quote, he, Boris Yeltsin, is not looking very good and is going to be hospitalized longer than expected. Now, how would you translate that? I'll tell you how I translate it. He's at death's door. He's hanging on by a thread, or he's already dead. I couldn't tell you which. All I know is when they begin to officially say that somebody has taken a turn for the worse, and it's somebody like Boris Yeltsin, you can almost bet the farm on the fact that it is about 10 degrees more serious than they suggest. So you better keep your plutonium dry out there, everybody, because Boris's replacement is not likely to be as nice a guy as he is supposed to be. One more little item I need to get in here. CNN reporting. You're going to love this one, or maybe you will love it. And maybe it's okay, or maybe not. The FBI wants a new national system to allow police to listen into one out of every 100 telephone calls in some high-crime areas. Critics say the proposal far exceeds current needs of law enforcement. The FBI argues digital communications, meaning the kind of telephones we sell here, and the computer age make it mandatory that they be able to listen in at the telephone company level, because they can't listen in to these new digital phones. And a lot of computer, fast-running computer information, scrambled, is beyond them. They can't keep track of it all. And so they want permission to listen in to one out of every 100 telephone conversations in some high crime areas. And I wonder how you feel about that. Is that a good idea? We do have, after all, an awful lot of crime, don't we? Or is that an awful idea? You tell me. All right, we're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour and allow the radio stations out there to do whatever it is they enjoy doing at the bottom of the hour. I really don't know. It varies. And then we'll come back. I've got a little more. We'll get phone lines open. And we'll begin to do uncensored, unscreened, unexpected talk radio. Coming next.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995. listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995.
Morning, everybody. Well, proving that anybody will follow up on anything. Yesterday morning, I think late in the show, I believe I mentioned I found a total of 78 cents in my couch. Now, I asked somebody in the audience, good with numbers, to estimate how much money there might be in all of America's couches, and this morning I've got my answer, and here it is. Art, there are approximately 260 million people in America, divided by three people per household, per family on average, roughly giving us about 8,666,000 households, considering that on the average, one family had one couch, each couch containing a total of 78 cents, using what you found. This means if you were to gather the change from each couch in America, you could glean a grand total of $675,999.99. That, my friend, is far from chump change, of course. But operating costs to travel all of America and do this service for free. Probably in the long run, you'd about break even. Blake in San Diego. And a fax that just is winging its way in now. Dear Art, we really like listening to your show here in our office in San Diego. We stay up all night coloring comic books. Really, we do color comics. Maybe it's a job. I don't know. Anyway, with all this discussion of the meetings of the warring factions from Bosnia, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, has anybody wondered why they picked this Air Force Base? All the books we've read have led us to believe this is where the government may be storing all the crashed UFOs. Isn't this also the place where Barry Goldwater was refused entrance to a special room? Yes, it is. I have that tape. Thanks, your fans, Little Jim, Jay, James, Adrian, and Steve. Steve, by the way, he really wants to rule the world. That comes from a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago in which we were kind of ruminating about the fact that we don't have any enemy. And lacking a specific enemy, like the old Soviet Union, we are turning on ourselves like so many rats put together, packed together with no food, eating ourselves alive, throwing children out windows, crack mothers doing that, and all the other horrible little litany of things that you could run off about today's society. More of what I call the quickening. Anyway, needing a focus of hate, some guy sent me a fax from L.A. saying, you want somebody to hate, why don't you hate my neighbor Steve? Steve is human slime. He is the worst neighbor. He's the neighbor from hell. I hate Steve. And in fact, Steve's everywhere are about the same. So we should hate Steve's. And it had some merit. And it kind of went from there, and the Steve's of the world are obviously in some sort of cahoots. And they've got something planned. We're not sure what it is, but the Steve's know. So anyway, we've begun a sort of a hate Steve thing, and it makes people feel better. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, Art, didn't think I'd get through. Great.
I can barely hear you, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
That's better. You got to talk into the phone. That's why
yeah,
they call
really.
The mouthpiece.
Hang on. Yeah,
where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the socialist state of California, San Luis Obispo.
San Luis Obispo, okay.
Anyway, about Sarajevo, people just go back, kind of look at Chamberlain and Hitler.
Yes.
And then they attack Poland.
Yes.
Kind of looks like the same thing when I heard the Secretary of State say, if this is not resolved, we've got World War III.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, I, you know, our Secretary of State is, I have yet to find real use for him in the human arena.
All right. As far as the FBI taking into the Internet, I've got a friend
No. If you weren't listening, sir, the FBI wants to tap 1 in 100 telephone conversations.
Oh, that's right.
In some high crime areas.
Yeah, to relate to that, I have a friend that works for MCI, and they've got what they call the fire room.
Fire room.
And what they have is a passcode that only they, you, if you know the password, you can get in and they get out. So they're fighting it tooth and nail. But I have a brother who works with computers. For everything that the FBI wants to tap in or whatever, there'll be another gadget that will stop it.
Well, I hope you're right. In the meantime, good idea or bad idea, tap 1 in 100 in high crime areas. Now, these are, you know, these are areas where a lot of crack traffic and gang banging and all the rest of it. Of course,
well, tapping phone calls, all you have to do is walk through there. If you put a closed policeman walking down there, you got the same effect.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for the call and not answering my question. The question is a very direct question. It is the one Congress is asked to answer now, and that is, should the FBI be given authorization to tap one out of every 100 phone calls in high crime areas? Now, it's not specifically said what high crime areas constitute, what they are. Oh, I guess I had to give out the phone numbers, huh? All the lines are full, but there's still people out there saying, what the hell's phone number? I want to call. If you're calling from west of the Rockies and you wish it to be toll-free, the number is 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, anywhere east, anywhere within the sound of my voice, and yes, we are live right here, right now, the number is 1-800-825-5033. The people in Detroit, the people in New York, want to make note, people in Maryland, all the new areas of affiliation. East of the Rockies, it's 1-800-825-5033. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. How are you doing today?
Okay, where are you?
I am calling from Kansas City.
Excellent.
KCMO Talk 81.
50,000 watts of attitude. I like it.
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, Mike Murphy's going to have you on his program here tomorrow morning. Looking forward to that.
Is that tomorrow morning?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Thank you for reminding me.
Say, Art, I've got a question to ask you, if you would help. I would love to take the kid gloves off in regards to these alien or UFO abductions.
How do you do that?
Well, you talk about what's going to be happening.
From what I've seen so far, I mean, the gloves don't fit.
Well, yeah, you're right there. That's true. You know, I liken it to a big jigsaw puzzle, like a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, with no picture after you get it together.
Or at least one you don't recognize as anything human.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Art, what I would like to do is I would like for people to stop and reevaluate that situation of the UFO scenario. 8.5 million of us here in this country, as you know, claim that there's been some kind of an alleged abduction scenario happened within their life.
Mm.
And that's just only in the United States alone. This is a global phenomenon. So really there's no telling what kind of segment of the humanity on this planet we're talking about.
Maybe they're taking millions.
It could be. You know, I was astounded. I had an abduction happen to me in 1977, and at that time there wasn't a whole lot of literature available. And through the years there's been more literature to come out in regard to this subject.
Well, what is your bottom line?
My bottom line is that we really need to protect ourselves from the possibility that we're looking at a completely malevolent type of situation. And if that's true, then something needs to be done to orchestrate a movement to start thinking of ways to protect ourselves. Obviously is not going to do it.
Lead helmets, sir.
I'm sorry?
Lead helmets. Look, I got to run. Thank you very much for the call, and have a good morning. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I would like to get that number that you gave for that paper, the free paper.
Gordon Scallion?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, that's enough to about scare the pants off you, huh?
Right, yes, yes, it did.
Have you been following Scallion?
No, I haven't. This is the first time I've heard about it.
You haven't. All right. Well, you listen on the air to some of those who have, all right?
Oh, I definitely will.
Keep my
ear open.
Thank you very much for the call. There are a lot of people doing this kind of thing out there, or claim to be. Scallion is one of the few, the very few, that I regard as the real McCoy, if there is such a thing. This is no doubt going to bring a million faxes saying, there is no real McCoy. Except the way the Bible says, well, maybe that's right. But I find it difficult to ignore a hit rate of 87-point-something%. And I've been watching now since we interviewed him about a year ago. Was it a year ago? More? About a year ago, I would guess, very carefully. And I'm sorry, but I'm chilled every time I get the next report that underscores something he said, and the latest good chill came with Etna and Vesuvius, and he mentioned both of them. So, you know, as I said, take it for whatever you want, and or disregard it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
I'm calling from Ohio.
Ohio.
Northeastern Ohio.
Listening to what?
Pardon?
Listening to what station, sir?
Oh, 570, that's in Youngstown.
Youngstown. Very good. WKBN.
Correct.
All right.
What I was going to tell you about, I've studied ancient prophecy for many years, and what Michael Scallion is saying is pretty right on, but things that I'd like to explain to you, one time you asked about what warning would there be. From everything I've read, and maybe things you could keep track of this, and maybe when Michael Scallion's back on, there'll be an interior warning.
He feels no need to come back on, sir. He's told us what he has to say, and according to the latest he sent me, he said, look, my predictions stand. There's nothing more to say. I could only repeat what I've already said.
Correct. But, I mean, what he's saying is everything I've read, and I studied this for years, about what's going to happen. But he's pretty accurate as far as pinpointing it. There'll be a warning, and really, this is one thing that people, you always said, what would God do to warn people?
No. I asked, everybody twist my words around. I said, what could God do to prove absolutely beyond any doubt that he is there? I mean, we're talking raining Gideon Bibles, maybe.
Correct.
The ocean parting, whatever.
Correct.
Something big.
Right. Well, it'll be individual interior warning. Does that make sense to you?
It does, thank you. That's exactly what a lot of other people have said. In other words, everybody at the appointed time will know. And that seems a reasonable enough answer. I don't know that it is for me, but for many it is. Okay, back to the first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi. We've got that out of the way. You're on the air.
My name is Valina, and I'm calling from Wendell, Idaho.
Valina. Ooh, that's a nice name.
Oh, thank you.
Well, what's on your mind, dear?
Well, I'm calling because on that one question you had about them tapping the lines of every 100 people.
One out of 100.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that would be completely wrong myself because, I mean, that's a person's privacy, you know. And so I'm completely against that.
Well, they're saying in high crime areas. Now, a lot of these people are saying, you know, when can you get the cocaine over here or something like that. Now,
Well, I can understand that, but how do they know that the call that they're going to be taking is actually going to be a crime call?
They don't.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
You know what they really do?
What?
They rely on computers, and the computers, it's really interesting what they're able to do. They look for keywords, like coke, crack, kilo, words that would tip them off. And if the computer finds one of those words, as it listens to zillions of conversations, it kicks out the conversation.
Okay.
That's why when you're on the phone talking to a friend from now on, be sure somewhere in the middle of the conversation you say, kilo, kilo.
Okay, I'll remember to do that.
Yeah, all right. All right. Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, I don't think it's such a hot idea myself. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hello.
I'm calling from Anchorage, Alaska.
Anchorage, Alaska. Okay.
My question is, did you know if Mr. Scallion say anything about Alaska and his predictions?
I just read you exactly all I have, my dear.
Oh, I missed it. We were coming on the home, and we didn't listen to the whole thing.
I will probably repeat it in about an hour.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you very much. There was nothing specific here about Alaska, so I would say rest easily at the moment anyway. Or you can rest easily under any circumstance. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, hi. I wanted to comment on that FBI thing with tapping every 100 phone lines.
No, sir. 1 in 100.
Okay, yes, I'm sorry. Excuse me. But there's something to prevent that. If anybody has access to the Internet, use Netscape. And MIT, if you go to http://www.mit.edu, they have something called PGP Phone, which is pretty good privacy, and it will encrypt your voice.
Yeah.
So it can't.
Well, you
that.
Can digitally encrypt your voice, but anything digitally encrypted can be unencrypted.
Well, actually, this guy who developed this is, I mean, the government, I mean, they figured out it would take a Cray computer, like, several years to encrypt.
Well, they have Cray computers, sir, and they, you know, I'm not saying that anything up on Internet may not be good, but the Russians and others have concocted things that were supposedly unbreakable, and they all get broken.
True. But the FBI won't do that for the average Joe.
It says pretty good privacy, PGP, right?
Correct.
Pretty good. That
pretty
doesn't
good.
Mean infallible.
No.
And that doesn't mean it can't be broken. So now think about this for a second. If you're an FBI guy and you're listening into something that is encrypted, I mean highly encrypted.
Right.
What are you probably going to do?
Well, I'm probably going to think
you're
going
to go, oh, no, this is encrypted. Damn, I can't listen to it. Or are you going to turn it over to your boss and say, hey, boss, this one's encrypted. I think we better take a good close look. Let's crank up the craze.
Very true, but if everybody did that, then it would be a good thing. If everybody were to do such a thing, then they couldn't do everybody.
Okay, now, well, that's true. Just as a matter of interest, you're on the phone a lot, right?
Yes.
Even right now?
Correct.
Do you say a lot of things on the phone the FBI would be jotting down?
Possibly.
Oh, you do?
Well...
Oh, no kidding.
Well, I mean, anything.
Well, let's find out a little more about you.
They could.
Let me see here. We got the call trace going? Yep, she's going. All right. So, I mean, what are we talking here, sir? Dope? Bombs?
No.
Guns?
No.
No?
Anything could be.
Well,
I could say just the wrong thing. Then they could take that the wrong way.
Remember what I said, sir. Kilo. Kilo. It'll get the attention of the craze. Listen, I gotta go. I got news.
Thanks.
All right. We'll see you later.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired November 1st, 1995.
It is, and I've got a big update from Gordon Michael Scallion. I will repeat it next hour. Otherwise, it's open lines. My email address is artbell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at AOL.com. That's artbell at AOL.com. If you want to join my infamous flaming news group, I can tell you how to do it on AOL. I can't tell you how to do it on other internet access points, but presumably you internet junkies certainly know how to do it. So the way you do it on AOL is go in, hit keyword, and just type in news groups. When you get to news groups, you will be greeted by some graphics, and you simply hit expert ad, and then they'll want you to type in something there. What you do is type in alt.fan.art-bell. Bell. I'll give that again in a second. And when you do, from then on, you hit my favorite news groups, and my news group will come up. And you can read all the latest insults. Again, it is ALT, as in alternate, or ALT, dot F-A-N, dot A-R-T, dash in the middle, then B-E-L-L. No spaces in any of that. So there you are. Now this, just in on my fax machine. Hey, Art. How about when Reagan invited Gorbachev to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base? Didn't he change his tune after this visit to Wright-Pat? Sincerely, your fans in San Diego. Yes, as a matter of fact, that is true. You know, I hadn't thought about that until just now. You think they took Gorby on the big elevator ride? And this, dear Art, I hate Steve, too. Actually, I hate two Steves, one Larry, big time, and three Bobs. But then there's always Connie, Lynn, and Sandy, too. John in Escondido. That's a lot. You hate a lot of people, John. I mean, the Steves I can understand. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Charlotte from South Carolina.
Charlotte from South Carolina.
Right. God, I can't believe I got through.
You ought to be in North Carolina, probably in Charlotte, huh?
Yeah.
Then you'd be Charlotte from Charlotte.
Yeah.
Anyway, glad to have you.
Yeah, I've been listening to you about 2 years now. I work third shift all night, so you're kind of all that's on. No offense, but God, I can't believe I got through.
So, in other words, I've got you because I've monopolized everything in the air.
Well, no, there's really only one talk radio program on at night, and I just turned it on one night about 2 years ago, and there you were.
And there I was, and you've been here ever since.
Yeah, I can't believe, I mean, this is like, I was just bored tonight, so I thought, well, I'll try to call, and I got right through. I can't believe it.
It can happen.
Yeah. I was just curious if you have any, like, liberal Democrat friends.
That's an interesting question. As a matter of fact, yes, I do.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, I'm pretty much a liberal.
Ah.
And definitely a Democrat, but, you know, I mean, you don't, I don't know, I like your show. I didn't think I would. I thought I was some conservative crazy guy, you know, but I don't know, I really like your show. I thought, I wonder if you have any liberal friends.
Well, I do. Or to coin an old phrase, some of my very best friends are liberals.
What about Dr. Democrat?
He's not one of them.
Oh, I thought y'all make good friends.
Actually, I enjoy his calls.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. I do. I really do. I enjoy his calls. And I think he does more to forward the conservative agenda than nearly any other person who calls the show, save perhaps Charlie.
Yeah, you have to admit he's fun. I love it when he calls.
Yeah, it's fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all I really wanted. I'm fixing to quit my job, so I don't know how much I'll be able to listen to you from now on. But
why are you going to quit?
I don't really get along with my manager. But
really?
Yeah.
Is your manager Steve?
No, my ex-manager is Steve, and he was great.
Really?
Yeah, I miss him a lot.
Well, it was a cover-up.
Yeah, it must be.
What kind of work do you do?
I work at a convenience store.
Ah.
Well, and I go to school.
What would you like to do, given your druthers?
I don't know. I went to about a year and a half of college, and I dropped out because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, so I decided to take some time off and think about it, and that was 3 years ago. So
you're still thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there any career or any following that catches your fancy?
Yeah, I really love animals, and I don't know, maybe, I don't know, I'm veterinarian or something. I just don't think I could give the shots and things, you know. I'd cry every time an animal died, but...
Oh, you mean to put them to sleep?
Well, you know, I can't do that.
Yeah, but when it comes to that, you know, it's an act of mercy.
Yeah.
One they don't do for people.
That's true.
All right, thank you very much for the call, and maybe maybe you ought to be a vet. Toughen up a little bit. I was a medic in the Air Force, and, you know, all the scenes you see in the movies where they take people into the operating room for the first time, they're true. You know, about one out of four or five, whoosh, right down on the floor. First time they see somebody opened up, it's on the floor time. And they just pass out. Oh, my God, you mean that's really inside all of us? I don't want to see this. Goodbye. Punk. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to talk to the gal who just hung up because I didn't...
Well, now think about it, sir. How can I let you talk to the gal who just hung up?
Well, I guess if I were to talk to the gal who just
hung up... Well, I mean, you are in the sense she's listening.
Okay, what I would say is by all means, pursue your dreams, but in the meantime, do whatever you best can decide to do. I didn't go to law school until I was 35 years old. I wish I had decided to. I went to art school, graduated with a degree in art, did that for 10 years, and then went to law school because the art just didn't pay enough. And at 35 years old, I just basically at 41, I'm a lawyer. I wish I'd done it the other way around. I think I would have.
You're a lawyer, huh?
Yeah, I think I would have liked to have made 10 years of a lawyer's wages and then gone to art school.
How do you feel about all the lawyer jokes?
I don't think they're all that funny, frankly.
No?
I just.
Not even the one about, you know, all the millions of lawyers at the bottom of the ocean being a good start?
No, there is one lawyer joke I think is funny.
Which one?
It's the one about the old man dies, but on his deathbed he tells the priest, the lawyer, and the doctor to, he divides up his money and tells them to each throw the money into his grave and on his funeral. And at his funeral, the priest throws in the cash and then the doctor throws in the cash, and the lawyer throws in an envelope. And afterwards, at the reception, the priest says, "You know, I have a confession to make. I kept half of it back and gave the rest to poor children." And the doctor says, "You know, I have a confession to make. I kept all of it back. I gave it to the fund to pay for poor people to pay for their medical bills." And the lawyer says, "I am shocked at you people. I wrote him a check for the entire amount."
You're right. That's pretty good.
I wrote you a fact.
Hey, wait a minute. There's one more thing, sir. I have a theory, and maybe you can confirm or deny it for me.
Okay.
But as America, which litigates itself to death here,
certainly does,
continues this litigation,
mm-hmm.
lawyers, on average, take about, 25-30%, sometimes even more of each settlement.
If there's like something like, say, a personal injury case or a case on contingency, sure. I would say probably 30% to a third was probably standard. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So wouldn't it follow that eventually, it may take a generation, but eventually lawyers will have all the money?
Well, assuming they don't spend it on fast cars, loud sport jackets, and the...
Fast women.
Yes, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, really, eventually, lawyers will accumulate all of the money.
Well, I think that one lawyer, what is the guy's name?
I don't know.
There's a very famous jurist and instructor, and I forget his name at the moment, who said that the law as a way of settling people's problems is vastly overrated. I think that he was right.
One last question. I don't get it. People admit they're attorneys that often.
Ah.
During the whole O.J. thing, I imagine you followed it.
I actually didn't pay a lot of attention to it. It was just
really?
One more trial to me. Not all that interesting one at that, except for the
really?
Social ramifications.
No kidding. Are you a trial attorney?
Oh, I've gone to trial a few times, but
I see. All right. Well, anyway, you called for a reason, and I diverted you.
So. Oh, well, I sent you a fact today, actually, about what I thought were the president's motivations for his act in Bosnia. And
what did you say?
Oh, well, basically, I said that I think that really the president is probably confused, or no, he's not confused. He has a different idea of who his constituency is than the rest of the general public, I think. He thinks his constituency are the people who believe that that we need to create or create a one world government, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was gonna say perhaps he thinks his constituency are the French and the English and the Italians and all the people who ought to be over there doing what we're about to have to go do.
Yes, well, I think that may well be. I think that his constituency is a group of people who believes that we need to act in concert as and we need to build a consensus in the world, and we need to get everyone used to it.
If you were to guess right now, without looking, how much money would you think is in your couch?
Is in my couch?
Yeah.
I would say a dollar. In fact, I would say on average, probably everyone has a dollar or so in their couch.
Check it out and let me know.
Okay.
Thank you very much. In fact, some of the rest of you, while you have an opportunity now, go check and see what's in your couch. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello there.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Where are you?
I'm calling from Colchester, listening to you, Illinois, listening
yes,
to you on WT8930.
Excellent. Welcome.
I spoke to you yesterday. Question. I could not resist making calling tonight on about the FBI and the monitoring of
one out of 100
calls.
Yes.
I see nothing wrong with it in the high crime area. I really don't.
Well, the only thing that I would want nailed down fairly carefully is what constitutes a high crime area. Now, might they not use this authorization to, for example, tap my phone? I mean, you have to imagine they would be interested in what I talk about. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people that are fairly powerful and have a lot of things to say, some of which the government might be either interested in or not like a lot. And might they not be tempted, once they have the ability, you know, to come after people like me?
Well, I don't think so, Art. I think they'd, I mean, that person there, they'd want to tap their line and not yours. I mean, let's face it, I mean, you're not a criminal.
Well, fine, but I guess that is my point.
I mean,
in other words, is it not a fairly slippery slope, or a possible slippery slope, listening to 1 out of 100 in high crime areas, to listening to people that, well, you know, might be politically disagreeable to whatever administration sits at the time?
Well, yes, I guess you could be right there.
Mm.
But
how about you? Would they like your conversations?
No, I think they'd find them extremely boring.
Really?
Yes. And comment about your book. I have this lady friend that's going to be getting your book, and she's told me, she said, well, she said, I'll let you read it after I get done with it.
Mm.
And, of course, I've heard people call in and say, you know, hey, Art, you talk too much about your book. Well, I wrote a magazine article back in 83, which was in a national magazine, and I still talk about it.
Well, as you notice, I have shut my mouth about it, and I'm waiting basically until I'm sure that just about everybody's got it. Then I'll let the audience talk about the book. And they can flame it or whatever they want to do.
Well, after I read it, I'll probably call and make a comment. And now that's like, I'm not in a real crime, high crime area. I mean, we've got a university 7 miles away.
So they might be listening.
Well, this is possibly so, but the nearest FBI office is in Decatur, Illinois, so, but
that doesn't matter.
Course, you know, they are not within, shall we say, well, it's people in Scannerland.
I mean, already you've said enough in this conversation for a Cray computer, which is what they use, to kick it out. You said FBI, you said TAP, you said criminal, you said all kinds of keywords that a Cray computer would say, excuse me, boys, you're going to want to listen to this one. See what I mean by this now?
Yeah, I see exactly where you're coming from, Art. But no, the only high crime that we've got in this area is, well, pardon the way I put this, water bills. But I do have one question, seriously.
Water bills, yes.
Have you had anybody ever, when they call in on your 800 lines, have you noticed that after so many rings you have a recording that comes in and kicks you off and you have to redial again?
Happens to everybody on every line.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
I didn't know that.
Yes, well then know it now. It is another great service of your diversified telephone company. They have no real good reason for having done this. In the old days, you could call and let a phone ring 24 hours a day. Now you can't do it. Now you get, I'm sorry, your party is not answering. Please try again later, or something like that. And they've got some limp excuse about not tying up phone lines. Or, I mean, how many of you out there let phones ring for 24 hours a day back when you could do it? Huh? Did you? It seems so unfair to be cut off when you're trying to get through to a talk program. We don't do it to you. It is the phone company. And it is the diversification. I somehow know it is. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. This is a socialist from Kansas City.
Yes.
Well, I don't mind you talking about your book. You know, you ought to be proud of your personal endeavor.
People stop making me talk about my book. I've been talking about it. I haven't been saying a word about it.
Well,
on purpose.
Well, I'm defending you here. I don't think you talk about it too much.
I remember you calling up and saying I was.
No. I didn't say that. Now, I never said that. I kind of ribbed you about it.
Now, I did say I would have put your photograph in it had you sent it. And you said, well, I thought I did. But you didn't.
No, I didn't say that. I said I wouldn't want my picture in it.
Oh.
You wouldn't want
to be in the lineup with the conservative nightmare and Charlie and Doc? They're in there.
There's too many right-wing nuts in this country. Somebody would bump me off for the things I've said.
You know, actually, when it comes right down to it, and you look at the violence that has been done in America, there has been more violence done by left-wing lunatics.
What?
Oh, absolutely.
Mr. Bell, this is a right-wing country. What are you talking about?
No, this is a generally...
That is outrageous.
This is a generally mid... A middle-of-the-road, slightly conservative country. That's what this is. From your perspective on the very far, fringy left...
You say such outrageous things.
Of course it's right-wing. Listen, I will hold you over because I know that you're not done with me yet.
Yes, sir. You got it coming.
Yeah, so do you. Stay right there. All right, more in a moment from the high desert. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995. listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995.
All right, here I am from your friends in Madison, Wisconsin, Art. Thanks for the scallion update. We still want to do your numerology, but it appears that you don't want us to. Now we think we know why. You are not really named Art Bell. That's your radio name. We think your real name might be Steve. Well, it might. It might be Steve Boutrous, Boutrous, by golly. Art, here's another one. Thought I'd mention that today actually marks the 75th anniversary of commercial broadcasting in the USA. Station KDKA, Pittsburgh, is credited with the first commercial broadcast, November 2nd, 1920. With a broadcast of, you know, this is really, I wish I could tell you why this is so interesting. I'll be damned, November 2nd, huh? I'll tell you what, I'll tell you tomorrow why this is so interesting. Ooh, talk about signs. Anyway, KDKA Pittsburgh is credited with the first broadcast on 2nd November 1920 with a broadcast of the Harding Cox election returns, asking the audience if they heard the cast. Then they should be respond by writing to the station. I'll be doggone. That's my board op, Ron, at KTUC in Tucson. Ron, thank you. Ron, you get me a phone number, if you would, to get hold of you, Ron, because I will tell you something that will blow your mind. So it was November 2nd, 75 years ago, the first commercial broadcast station went on the air. You have no idea how personally meaningful that is to me, and I can't tell you today why. Tomorrow I can tell you. Art, Pretty Good Privacy was named that way as a sort of joke. You see, it takes less than an infinite amount of time to decrypt it. Not much less, though. So it's only pretty good instead of perfect. This encryption program has scared our government so much that PGP has been classified as a military weapon in the same category as plutonium. You may think I'm kidding, but it's all true. Signed, Eric the Hacker. And by the way, AOL, America Online, has a big bit of news out that made national news. If you are on AOL and you get something, a piece of email called Good Times, do not open it. Delete it. It is one of the most horrible computer viruses ever concocted. And it will literally get into the root directory of your hard drive and possibly destroy it. It can begin running an algorithm that would actually damage or destroy your processor. So it's a piece of email called Good Times. I think AOL is trying to get rid of it, but it's running around in their system so far without a way to get rid of it. So it's horrible. If you get any email that says Good Times, believe me, do not open it. All right, back now to my friend in Kansas City.
Yes, you call me your friend. You do have liberal friends.
I do.
That was interesting about your dad doing a flip-flop. He's a liberal?
Well, it was one of the most... It was awful what I did to my dad. He loved Richard Nixon. I mean, he loved him. And he absolutely did not believe the Watergate charges. And, of course, I was very young. But I was interested, and every day I would point to the newspaper headline, you know, as Nixon would get in deeper and deeper and deeper, and my dad would have fits, and we'd get into big fights about it, and finally the day came when, you remember the I am not a crook thing, and then past that, and my dad flipped, and I think there was a little mental break there, and when it occurred, and you know, lately... I mean, my dad was a Marine. He fought on Guadalcanal. There are photographs of my dad on Guadalcanal in the book, in my book. See, I talked about it. There you are.
Yeah.
And now he uses terms like spraying bullets and these awful guns and on and on and on. So,
but you did a flip at the same time, I take it.
Well, I grew up.
You got religious.
Well,
you discovered your God.
Look, I'm not religious about my politics. I've got a pretty open mind, actually. But I am generally conservative, which is generally correct.
Well, that's that money factor. I don't talk politics with my friends or potential friends or acquaintances.
I understand that. Otherwise, you'd have few.
I'd have certain friends. No, that conservatives, see, you people, you do have a multiple personality. Well, that's one of the reasons you can't elect a Republican here.
You're confusing. You are confusing multiple personality with open mind. You see, yours is so constricted, myopic, that whenever you see anybody who can think in several different directions and chew gum at the same time, you're confused.
Is that right? Well, how come, this government thing.
Is this going to get profound, or are you just now reaching for something to say?
No, profound. The government thing with, what the man, the lawyer man, talked about, that Clinton's constituency is
yes,
a new world order.
Yes.
I don't understand where that comes from. I think he's backed the United Nations. I think any sensible man would, or woman. It's a pretty bad world if we don't come together and talk.
There's nothing wrong with talking. And you know what? If those guys at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base want to shake hands and make peace, I say, by God, great, go home and have peace.
Yeah.
Well,
one
more thing. You know, you said the lawyer guy.
Right.
You remember the lawyer joke he told? It was pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
Here's another one. Let's see if you can get it. Six lawyers buried up to their neck in the sand. What do you have?
I give up.
Not enough sand.
Yeah,
I'll see you later. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Charles in San Mateo, California.
Hi, Charles.
You live in Pahrump.
Yes, Pahrump, Nevada. Yes.
Yeah, I go camping out there in the Amargosa Valley. It's one of my favorite spots.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, I love it. I photograph out there. I do like celestial photography, and I was wondering if I could send you some pictures of the moon rising over the Spectre Hills.
You certainly may, Alan.
I've been waiting for you to give your post office box number
okay.
Again. But
do you wish it now?
Yeah, please.
Do you have a pencil?
I'm ready to go.
Do you have paper?
I'm ready.
All right. Post office box 4755 in Pahrump, Pahrump.
Right. And the zip?
Nevada. Zip code 89041-4755.
Thanks, Art. Yeah. And when I want to wash the dust off me, I go stay at the Saddle Inn there, Pahrump.
There you are.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Talking to you.
Thank you. Also, an update. I had a feeling the guy was wrong. Art, I think your sofa change calculator came up with less than $1 million, was way off the mark. At three persons per household, there are over 80 million, not 8 million households, you're right, in the United States. Even if only one half of them have sofas, unlikely, 78 cents per sofa yields, the bottom line, $33.8 million in sofas. That's serious. $33.8 million in America's sofas. The only thing I'm not sure about is that my 78 cents was a good average. So why don't you all take a minute out now, those of you willing, go to your sofa and count the change. Come back and tell me. And maybe when we get a few reports, we can come up with what appears to be some sort of average. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art.
Yes.
This is Pam in Memphis.
Hi, Pam.
Last night you were talking about why Clinton wanted to get involved with Bosnia.
That's correct.
Well, what helped the economy get out of the Depression?
What Depression? Whose economy?
1930s. It was World War II, right?
What does that have to do with Bosnia now?
Well, maybe he wants a war, and he thinks it'll help our economy, because if we go to war, then everybody have jobs creating bombs and weapons and bullets and all that.
So, to help the munitions people and the defense contractors, we need a good fight.
Well, to get everybody jobs. I mean, this is the only way he can think of for everybody to have jobs.
War equals jobs.
That's what it has been before. I'm not saying that this is a good idea, but it seems like he has a lot of odd ideas to me.
Are you married?
No.
No. If you were and you had a son and he was of the age, how do you think you'd feel about his going over there to the land of landmines and death?
Well, I wouldn't like it at all, but if he was 18, it would be his own decision.
Well, that's true. That's true, and so far it is a military force. Now, doing this is going to require the calling up of the reserves.
Right.
So it's going to pull a lot of people away from families and jobs.
Right.
So, well, all right, thank you very much for the call. I think it is the foreign policy military idea from hell, myself. And we're talking about phone taps. How many of you say things on the phone that you would not want the FBI to hear? You know the way to foil this? The way to foil this is everybody begins to use keywords that will cause the CRAE to go crackers. In other words, whatever it is, let's see, FBI, bomb would be good. I'm sure bomb would kick out a conversation. See, the CRAE looks through a zillions of conversations, and it looks for keywords, FBI, ATF, McVeigh. We could come up with a million keywords that would stop that CRAE cold, and if everybody would simply insert some of these words into the middle of each conversation they have, well, here, I'll show you. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Art, great to get in touch with you. Dean from Maui.
You're calling from Maui?
Yes, in Hawaii. How's it going, Art?
Well, boy, I'll tell you, it's a bomb of a call, sir. Glad to hear all the way from Hawaii.
Well, just calling about an article in a Time magazine. And have you familiar with Juanita?
Juanita?
Yes.
I remember her. She was really something. I met her south of the border, and we had some great times.
A young Inca girl sacrificed about 500 years ago.
Is this the one found recently?
Yes, yes.
How did they know her name was Juanita?
Oh, that's what the team named her.
Oh, I see. In other words,
okay,
they didn't really know.
I just was a little bit worried because they're going to do blood and DNA examination.
Yes.
And they're going to look for viruses and germs that may have been around back then. Just a little bit nervous, Art.
Great. Maybe that's great. Maybe they'll find something they can use. Now, you ask yourself this question. If they found a deadly virus in this Inca girl, long dormant, but one that they can reconstruct, synthesize, and for which there is no cure, what do you think they would do with it? A, destroy it so it could never get loose and hurt mankind, or B, put it away in our arsenal of doomsday weapons that we can let loose just in case we need to. Or C, release it immediately.
just the thought of them trying, and they're not even doing it here. They're doing it in a where was it found in Arequipa? So.
Well, I'm asking again. What do you think they would do with it?
Probably try and make a weapon, Art.
Yeah.
Put it in our arsenal, save it.
Hate to say it, but I'm afraid you're absolutely correct. Thank you very much for the call. Have a good morning. Sorry, but the guy from Hawaii is correct. They'd probably put it in the arsenal. I don't think they'd release it right away. I don't think they would. All right, back to it. I may have a few surprises for you this morning as the morning wears on. No promises. We shall see. By the way, here we have an honest letter from a newspaper delivery person whose name I shall not use because his boss listens also. Dear Art, I am a newspaper carrier in Memphis. I'm responding to the question about carriers putting papers where customers can't see them. The answer to this question is a definite no. We have employees at the, well, I don't want to identify where, who re-deliver missing papers. The dirty deed would come back to haunt us. From experience, if a customer can't see the paper from their front door, they complain. So we throw the papers from our car onto the customer's driveway. For customers that are handicapped, we walk to the door and place the paper on the porch. Now, some people do take advantage of this. They don't want to walk and pick up their paper. If we know they are fooling us, weird things can happen to their paper. Have you ever closed a storm door on a paper? You can't open that door very easily, of course. Well, I've never done such a thing, but I've heard rumors about others doing it. The paper gremlin attacks again. Well, you can read into that one whatever you want, but it's not real hard to read between those lines, huh? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, Art.
Turn your radio off, please.
Yes, Art.
There you go. Yes?
Yeah, I'm calling from WGNS country.
Where?
WGNS country.
Where is that?
Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Oh, yes.
Okay, I just heard on the radio a couple of days ago that they were thinking about taking your show off around the first of the year.
Might I ask what exactly you heard?
Okay, they said something about you all had thought about taking the show, your program, the Dreamland Angel program off the air around the first of the year.
Yes, the network is moving from the station you're listening to.
Okay.
And but you will still hear the program. Where did they announce this?
It was on WGS.
Well, I mean, like, did the manager go on the air and say it was happening, or?
Yeah, he did.
He did, huh?
Yeah, I guess it was a recording or something, but he did say that.
It was a recording.
Right.
Okay, well, I guess they're free to announce that. It is, in fact, true. We have decided to change affiliates there. And all I can tell you at this point is you will not miss the show.
Okay. So it'll be on somewhere else down the dial?
As they said at WKRP, up and down the dial, yes, I'll be filling you in.
Okay. For the station that I'm listening to right now, it's WGNS.
Right.
Okay.
I know.
Okay.
I appreciate the call, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hey, Art.
Yes.
My name is Dominic. I used to drive cab in Las Vegas.
Oh, yes.
You remember me?
I do.
Yeah, I just was listening. I'm in Rochester, New York. I'm back home now, and I picked up the tune on the radio, and I heard you. I said, wow.
I bet you couldn't believe it, huh?
No, I thought I was going to never hear you again.
That is one big mama of a radio station there in Rochester.
Yeah, Wham Radio. Is
Wham 1180. It's 50,000 watts, non-directional totally, and it covers literally from Maine down to Florida.
Yeah, I missed that Mount Shasta. You remember Mount Shasta?
Tom, of course.
Yeah. Nice guy.
You know he passed away.
Yeah, I know. I remember just when I left Vegas, he passed away.
You know,
anyway, remember my predictions about the weather?
I told you that. I remember something about it. Yes.
The fires in Kuwait and.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And we were going to have some bad weather. Well, it's turning out that way.
And you think it's because of the fires in Kuwait?
Well, no, I don't think it's only that. I think.
Have you changed your view on that? In other words, you think, yes, it's obviously we've never had this many hurricanes.
Yeah.
The earthquakes. I'm going to reread the scallion thing in this next hour. I suggest you do not miss it.
I won't miss it. I'd like to see if you ever get that Mr. Lear on. He's a great guest.
Well, it's been a long, long time.
Yeah. Like
so
to hear
I'll get John on again. Yeah, I bet that was some surprise, huh? There you are in Rochester, and all of a sudden there we are.
I hope you're going to stay on here now at this station here.
We'd like that.
Yeah, well, I'll send in my little request and tell them to keep you on.
All right.
Enjoy your show.
Well, we just got there.
Okay, I know you did.
Take care, my friend.
Okay, Art.
Right. That's true. Good to hear from New York. As a matter of fact, be kind of fun to hear where exactly the Rochester signal goes. Maybe I will hold open a line for that. How to do that. Got about a million Detroit calls yesterday, but not a lot from, you know, but it was Rochester's first night on. So a lot of people are sitting there going, who the hell is this guy? What's he doing? Well, what we're doing is live talk radio in the middle of the night. Let's see, it ought to be one, two, two, three, 4 o'clock in the morning. 4 o'clock in the morning already in Rochester. So when I come back, I will hold the line open for Rochester listeners for a little while. I think that might be fun. What do you think? What do you think? Tap one in 100 phone lines in crime-infested areas. The only thing I don't understand is how they define that. That'd be real important. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995.
That it is, my friend. And coming up in a moment, I've got a surprise from Perth. That should give you some hint of what we're about to do. And so now, I promised it. I promised it. And we're going all the way now to Perth, Australia. The man down under, he's Stan Deo, and he's a fascinating guy. We had him on once, and I'll tell you, Stan, you kind of flamed me a little bit in your email message.
I did.
Yeah.
I admit it.
Let me read part of what Stan said. Art, we have given you the nickname the Artichoke. You see, artichokes have lots of barbs on the outside, but when you butter them up and look behind the barbs, you find a tender heart. So that's a semi-flame, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, when we first had you on, Stan, you know, the people up at the network, they're a humorous bunch. And they thought, initially, they heard me calling Australia, and they went, what? I wonder if we'll even be able to sell enough tapes to cover the cost of the call. Well, we sold tons of tapes, and... So I went, na-na-na-na-na-na. Basically, you're a fascinating character. You captivated the audience, Stan, and that's why you're back. Look, tell the audience, and there's a lot of new audience out there, tell the audience who you are and why you're in Australia, and then we'll go from there.
All right, Art. I'm Stan Deo, obviously born in the United States in Texas, in a town called Valley Mills, and I went from there up to Dallas and was raised there. I went to the United States Air Force Academy for a couple years in Colorado at the courtesy of the government. I got into a lot of very interesting projects at the academy, some of which were not in the normal curriculum. They were to do with intelligence. And I know that a lot of people will find it hard to believe, but that's kind of where they recruited a lot of people at the time. And I was part of an experimental program with people that were programmed with high-speed flash queuing, with hypnosis, with various other things that allowed us to...
Wait a minute. You just jumped by me. What is high-speed flash queuing?
Oh, sorry. I forgot. Yep. Where they put you in a room, several of you, and... the temperature is at body temperature in the room, and you see a screen in front of you, and you're told to focus at the focus dot and close your eyes. And when the instructor says open, you are to open your eyes and not blink for 4 or 5 seconds while a high-speed flash slide projector puts 200 frames a second on the screen in front of you.
Wow.
And your mind is programmed with every page photographically. When they do this, you don't realize it at the time, but it does shove it into your subconscious mind, and you assimilate it over the next few days or weeks as you sleep. that there were a lot of things that were done in that manner as experimental things, but some of us did better than others at receiving the data.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an aside, I remember in the class where we did this at the academy after lunch one afternoon, the first time they tried it on us, well, we went in and they pulled this stunt on us, and we all laughed because they told us we just read a 200-page book in a few seconds, and all we could see on the screen was just flashing gray patterns. And he said, look, I'll prove it to you. And he started mentioning words, key words out of the story that they just pumped into our mind. And when he said, I think it was like a scarf or a writ or something like that, Stretch up behind me jumped up, this tall, skinny fellow, he jumped up and he says, sir, let me interrupt. I see the page you're talking about. I see it floating in the air. I can really see it.
Ooh, that's incredible.
And he read it word for word. And so, you know, then we were impressed. But anyway, that's where I went to school. And from there, things got more complicated as I left the academy and was approached by Dr. Teller's people, Edward Teller, through Dr. James R. Maxfield in Dallas, about new kind of propulsion systems for circular wing flying craft. And eventually, along those lines, I was sent to Australia and introduced to the Australian government by Teller and Maxfield's people to continue my research down here. Why? I don't know. They just simply said that Australia was the place for me to do it. Is that enough, or do you want more?
Well, tell them the capabilities of the craft that you worked on.
Well, the craft that I was first designing was what's called a plasma craft. It heated the air and moved it over the surface of the craft and underneath it and back inside and up around again and swirled it around like a toroid or like a smoke ring.
Right.
And we had not built one. I was just simply going through the method of moving charged air at home with my equipment. And anyway, this particular kind of craft would fly very fast and leave no shockwave, but it would leave a heat pattern and it would frequently catch its seals on fire. Now, when I was recruited into the program, I was told about 52 other projects that have preceded mine since the mid-50s. I was late coming into the game, and you weren't invited in unless you stumbled upon the right way to do propulsion. Now, as I'm saying, mine was a plasma drive. There were others that I was shown, one particular one that other people had done, which used electromagnetic fields, doing essentially the same thing I was doing with the plasma, charged air, but doing it with electromagnetic fields around and through the craft and its crew. Much more efficient than what I was working on, but still along the same principle of breaststroking your way through the environment without pushing. It's called asymmetric propulsion. It can turn corners. The new craft, like you could turn a corner 25,000 miles an hour in the atmosphere, or underwater, if that were the case. I mean, I don't think they'd fly that fast underwater, but in the atmosphere or in space, you can turn a corner that fast without spilling a drop of coffee while you're drinking and go around a corner. Inertia is conserved, momentum is conserved toward a focus point inside the craft so that you may get heavier, but that's about it. And
all right, Stan, I had Richard Hoagland on the other day.
Ah, yes. How's he doing?
Oh, just fine. He made reference to the STS-48 mission. You're familiar with that?
Yes.
You're familiar with the video footage that came from STS-48?
The people that got it out of NASA first sent me copies to analyze.
So you're very familiar with it?
Yes.
Stan, some of what you see in those in that video would appear to be doing exactly what you're just talking about.
Yeah, I know. If you looked at the whole video before the laser burst and everything else, or the plasma burst that went up, apparently, you see a lot of things flying around in the atmosphere at high speed that you don't normally see. I'm still not sure whether all that traffic was real items or whether it was thermal anomalies, but whatever they were traveling very fast and making most erratic movement.
Exactly. The kind of turn you just talked about. One of them.
Exactly. Look, I understand how all this happens. I mean, I've seen photographs inside the assembly area over in Saudi Arabia where at Jabal Tawouk, where they did some of this, the Americans did some of this testing. And these craft are just big flat bar coils wrapped around something like a donut, a square section donut, and they generate a tremendous field by building it up over a period of time. Anyway, they can do things that are extraordinary. They really affect the passage of time. I'm not saying it's a time machine or anything crazy like that, but they can affect physical and chemical reactions in matter, living or inanimate,
right.
So that when you're inside the field, the time dilates for you or expands depending on where you are in the field. So you could spend 5 days and 15 minutes if you're in the wrong place in the field.
Huh.
In other words, it came up walking one of the craft that was parked and it had its field on, and you started walking toward it. Theoretically, as you started to walk toward it and go into the field and talk to the people inside and turn around and come back out, to you, 5 days may have passed. You can grow a 5-day beard, but when you get back out to the outside where you entered the craft from, 15 minutes may not have passed. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I do. That's incredible. Stan, for this kind of technology to have existed this long with Stan Deo and some other people I've talked to, only knowing about it, and it not being widely known, although it is now, how can that be? I mean, how can that incredible kind of secret be kept?
Well, I think that's a fair enough question, Art, and it's not one that is new to me. I've asked it myself many times. How is it that we're the only ones that know this, and why doesn't anyone else know about it? Part of the problem is that when people like myself have tried to leak it, there's been such a tremendous media, put down, that serious people never considered it. They just said, well, if it was possible, they would have told me. I'm a physicist, or I'm a leading financier, or a philosopher. You know, all these people would have said, I would have been told if it was real. And so I assume that a part of it is the psychology of mass movements is the reason that people haven't been more aware of it. The information is here. You can dig up a lot of the stuff I do. I give photostats, and I tell you names, places, people, companies. Go look it up. I've printed it for 18 years. The only thing I can tell you positively is that America has withstood every assault I could make trying to get my books into the country. I can only do it through small mail-order houses or direct mail because the major publishing companies won't touch me with a 10-foot pole. And I'm a bestseller in this country, and I'm published in French and English in 22 countries, but I can't get in America. I've been trying to tell people in America, and that's the biggest vacuum in the knowledge game is in America. You guys just are being wrapped in a blanket and kept blind.
Right. Well, I really do believe that. It's not so much what we're told as what we're not told.
Exactly.
That really is true. Now, I did find the facts in question that came from a fellow named Nighthawk. So we're going to jump subjects here, and then we'll come back.
Okay.
But he said, Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, long ago predicted a chamber beneath the paws of the Sphinx would be found. In it would be found records of Atlantis. I believe Gordon Michael Scallion mentioned a major find in Egypt this year. Yes,
he did.
Also, John Anthony West. Today on KOIN-TV here in Portland, they ran a story that indeed they had just uncovered a chamber just exactly where Cayce said it would be. Now, I've also got late news that I will give you and the audience from Gordon Michael Scallion. He sent it to me late today, very serious stuff. But regarding the area under the Sphinx, do you know anything about that, or is this sort of updating you?
It's updating me. I have to be honest, Art. I do have a comm link to Scallion over the computer, and I've just been remiss this week. I haven't gotten back to his last message, but I know he has said that, and I know there are digs occurring near the Sphinx. They have been for several months with reputable archaeologists, and there have been chambers found there and further up the Nile. I will just have to wait and see as far as I can say.
How do you feel about Gordon Michael Scallion? I just, you know, just sort of an off-the-hip reaction on Scallion.
Well, let's say he does things differently than I do. Certainly his earthquake and volcano-type stuff, his predictions there, are almost identical to what I get doing the hard slog with mathematics and computers and data from NASA. I come up with the same answers, perhaps not as quick or not as far in advance as his, But on that particular side of things, yes, I think what he is saying is of good social value.
All right. Well, he said, watch very carefully Mount Vesuvius in Italy and Etna in Sicily. And I just, let's see, it was Sunday night, Stan. CBS ran a big story on the geologists watching Vesuvius, and they think it's about to go.
That's true.
We've
been saying the same thing in our newsletter.
I just got an article from a European newspaper saying that the geologists in Sicily are now detecting increased serious activity at Etna.
Yep.
And then late today, I got a bulletin from Gordon saying that he believes the last cycle has begun.
Well, look, in Italy, I mean, what I'm going to tell you here is published news on the American Reuters or AP. So
all right, before you tell me, it's a good point to have a cliffhanger. So hang on just a second. Let me take care of business, and we'll come right back to Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. Stay right where you are. Now, back to Stan Deo. Stan.
Yes, Art.
All right, Earth changes, and what you see and what he sees, different methods, same rough conclusion, eh?
Yep. Look, on Vesuvius, let me just point out, 24th of August this year, there was an article in Reuters, and I'll just read you a part of it here, and you try to read between the lines here.
All right.
Volcano on the brew. Vesuvius still threatening after all these years. Most scientists agree there is no risk of an eruption soon, but disagree over how much warning Vesuvius on the densely populated Bay of Naples will give before exploding again. We don't want to see similar destruction as what occurred in 79 AD.
Mm-hmm.
About 50 people were killed in 1944 when we had the last major lava flow.
Right.
The last significant eruption was in 1631 before that, killed 4,000 people, blah, blah, blah. Scientists and geologists at the government Civil Protection Department recently completed a major plan to evacuate some 600,000 people from the Vesuvius area.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, why would we do this?
It's at this point, it is a voluntary evacuation thing. And the story that ran on CBS, Stan, said the people who live below Vesuvius have the same attitude as the people of Pompeii, live for today, and they're not moving.
Well, what about the people in California and Oregon and Washington State that are living right on an active line and the people in Japan? They're not moving.
I know.
But I'm sitting here watching this stuff on these thermal satellites, and I can't believe people still live there, but they're doing it.
But, Stan, I understand that. I mean, people have lives, they have families, they have homes, they have jobs, they have all of this, and you just, you know, on Scallion's word or Stan Deo's word or Art Bell's word or anybody else's, you don't want to believe it. You don't want to believe it.
I know. Well, last time we talked on your show toward the end of it, some people asked me, what do you do? And since that your show, a lot of your listeners, lots of them have sent me email and letters and questions about what do we do with our business, our family, and this and that.
Right.
And your point is very valid. My opinion is that there is no safe place on the planet, really. I mean, there probably is, but I mean, it is impossible for us to really say that is the best place. Nothing will happen to you. You've got a perfect, happy life there. You're just going to have to make the best of life where you are. But it doesn't mean you can't prepare for things to float in your area or food that you can carry on your back or transport or communication, whatever you want that you can carry with you. You can make minor preparations to keep your family mobile and provided for, basically, in the event of a civil emergency. And all you have to do is read the old newspapers in the last 3 or 4 years about any major hurricane or earthquake site and see that there was fresh water shortages for months after that and sanitation problems. And look at these problems and address them for your family. Those are the important issues. If you survive the initial big bang or thump or tidal wave or whatever, great. Pick up your life and go on after that. You're not going to be alone. Other than that, as I said before in your last show, from my Christian perspective, it is a very good time for people to really look at their spiritual life because there's going to be a lot of people dying. And for those of us that believe you live after this, it is tantamount to look at that side of it.
All right. Well, on that cheery little note, we'll break here at the bottom of the hour and be right back to you, Stan. Stan Deo, all the way from down under, Perth, Australia. More coming in a moment, and yes, we will get the phone lines open. Stay right there.
You're listening to Art Bell's Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995.
Top of the morning, everybody. My guest is Stan Deo from Perth, Australia. We're going to find out why Stan's in Australia here shortly. Maybe we'll try and find out why he can't get published here, of all places. His homeland. Hey, Stan, Do people in Australia refer to it as the land down under? I suppose you guys don't think of it that way, huh?
We refer to it that way because everyone else does.
I would think from your perspective, we would be the land down under.
Oh, I suppose, but they do look as up. They look up to America.
I see.
Believe it or not.
I see. Stan, what I would like to know first, I guess, is, you agree in substance with Gordon Michael Sky and about the Earth changes that you both say are coming, but you come at it from different directions. Explain to the audience how you reach the conclusions that you have reached.
All right. Well, there's two things. First of all, my findings have about earthquakes and volcanoes and various other things are from analyzing data from the NASA SEAWIFS, S-E-A-W-I-F-S program, and from the OTUS program from Naval Fleet Headquarters, which I have access to over the Internet. I have been putting together color image maps and plotting earthquake data from USGS in Denver to put together long-term period plans for or forecasts for when earthquakes are going to get worse in various areas. And going on that basis, which is basically statistical, I've been able to know when at different times of the year we're going to have windows, like Gordon does, and certainly we're approaching three windows right now, between now and the end of January. And at the same time, I've been able to look at heat patterns in the surface of the oceans using the Naval satellites,
mm-hmm.
and this tells me when heat is building up under the ocean for some reason. That's not 100% accurate, but so far it has been so accurate that in fact, when we did your show last, I had no idea that the areas that we targeted at that time would be hit by so much destruction then. I was expecting it even later. And certainly Japan had 8,700 earthquakes in the space of 10 days after I talked to you on the show.
It's a funny thing, Stan. You're exactly right. Actually, it's gone now, I think, over 9,000. And I reported that on the show, and people were telling me I was out of my mind.
Oh, and, no, you're not. It is all over the wire services.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And people choose not to believe these things, I guess, or don't want to hear them, and so they don't.
Well, let me tell you something interesting about that. You and I read the press. I went over, I tied into Japan to their seismic services there and got the data as well. I called our guys in the United States Geophysical Service in Denver. I said, hey, look, guys, I'm on your instant alert system here for big earthquakes. How come I didn't get any notice of the, at this time it was 6,000 earthquakes that have occurred in Japan? I said, you know, there's nothing on my charts. Where's the data?
Right.
And the guy says to me, oh, gee, did they have that many earthquakes over there? Didn't know it. It wouldn't show on us, you know, if it's less than Richter 2 or something, we probably wouldn't pick it up and wouldn't know about it. And they didn't have a clue officially that it was even happening after 6,000 of them had occurred.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I don't believe it. But anyway, that's the official story. And there's a lot of stuff that happens. Like on my webpage on the internet, I put addresses that tie into NASA and various other places I use so that people can go in and grab the same data and do the same kind of analysis themselves. Don't trust me, do it yourself.
What they probably ought to do, Stan, is to put in a link between your webpage and mine.
Yes, I think I can. Well, so yeah, they can vector to mine from yours, and I can go to yours from mine. If you want me to, I'll put you on mine as a vector.
Oh, that's fine. I don't understand all of that yet.
If I say push Art Bell's name on my page, it'll instantly dive over to your section. If you want me to, I'll do that. I'll certainly do that.
Yeah, and you can request to the people who run my page. I don't run it, Stan. They do it for me, and you can request they do the same thing.
All right. Well, I'll drop in on an email and tell them that.
All right.
But anyway, where were we? The reporting of these earthquakes and things. Now, some of my links on my internet web page are little lines that you press a button and it takes you off to that particular site. Some of these have been cut off in the last 3 or 4 days.
Oh.
A couple of them into NASA, they have denied access to me. They were open. They were public. One of them was the Mars Exploration Group. I told people how to go in there and get a daily Martian weather report. Okay, they have even color pictures of the wind patterns on Mars every day for the Mars missions they're planning right now.
And they cut it off.
They cut my link off. No explanation, access denied. Now, it was only after I put it on my webpage and started to share it with folks and let other people dive in and have a look, bang, I got denied access. Now, there's a lot going on, like with comet and asteroid defense. My last newsletter, which is a printed one, I can't get it up on the internet just yet. I'm working on it. We found inside NASA an AIAA paper on the near-Earth object conferences they've held, and they held one in September in Italy. All the leading scientists, I've got every name here, and I've got even minutes of the proposed meeting, what they were going to discuss, about how serious the threat of asteroid and comet near-Earth approaches are. And they're spending money and putting urgent all over it. And then at the bottom they say, however, don't worry, this probably won't happen for another 300 or 400 years that anything would hit, but we're just getting ready. This is bulldust. They're sitting down here laying out plans for orbit determination, deep space tracking. They've even discussed how they're going to explode a two-stage nuclear device near an asteroid to powder dust and then to use that dust as a cushion so they don't fragment it and blow it out of orbit to get it away from us. They're talking things here that are extraordinary, and this is on the internet in a non-classified section, just not widely broadcast. So I printed the whole thing in the newsletter. Everything they had, I just printed.
Stan, the latest I've got on Hale-Bopp, which is a gigantic, comet. I mean, who knows? It's 100 miles in diameter at minimum. And
yep.
It is out beyond the orbit of Jupiter. And the late information I've got is they've taken a photograph showing a strange spiral and a piece that apparently has broken off from it.
That's correct.
And is about 30% the brightness of the nucleus of the comet itself. Not a third the size, mind you, but a third the brightness. Now, do you have anything beyond that, or is that about what you've got?
At the moment, that's where it seems to be stuck. Again, at the NASA links, at JPL and at Enki, wherever we're diving in to grab the comet pictures, things have slowed down there. In the last week, we can get in to most of them. We're not denied access, but things have slowed down. There's been a lot of talk about why it appeared to change course, and it was bad data in the beginning, so that's why they think it was, and all this kind of stuff. But there is something very unusual about this comet. And it is doing, as you're saying, it is spiraling, it's thrown off a piece, but at the moment, everything's going quiet on it. And if you could see the the history of the data pages, you'd realize that it's gone slow for some reason.
And one other item. It has never, you know, our American press has always had a thing on comets. I mean, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, they all pick up stories on comets. And here we've got something roughly 10 or 20 times the size of Halley's Comet, and there has not been one word.
Well, the mass of it is actually, I think they said 100, I think the mass they said might be 1,000 times that of Halley's Comet.
Well, it may be. It may be. In other words, monstrously larger, whatever
yep.
the number is, and there's not been a word in the standard press. That just doesn't figure. It's really weird.
It is very weird. And looking behind the scenes with all the emergency meetings going on about what we do to move comets and asteroids out of Earth's way, I tell you, in fact, I've talked to a couple of the leading astronomers. One is Duncan Steele here at the Australian National Observatory,
uh-huh.
who has written a book called The Killer Asteroids. And I called Duncan. I said, look, I hate to bother you. I said, but should we tell people, you know, that they're coming? And that there is a problem to avoid the panic problem. Should we really tell them or not? And he said, look, that might have been the idea a few years ago. He said, but now we've got to tell them. He said, that's why I brought the book out. It is serious. We need to tell them. It is not a minor issue. So, you know, how many warnings do you need? I mean, this guy is a qualified person in the field, respected, and his group, he and McDonough, I think, is the other fellow, have been watching this new comet. And their reports show all the time on the comet pages. In fact, that's another area. In fact, while we're talking, I'll just plug in and see if we can pick up the comet pages.
All right.
And I'll put it in the background. We'll talk about it later.
All right. Why are you in Australia?
Choice. I was sent here by the American, elements of the American government with Dr. Keller and his crowd at Lawrence Livermore Radiation. I was sent here to do research, continue my research on two things. Primarily a new kind of aircraft propulsion that would make a flying saucer. And secondary to that, which got me in more trouble than the saucer stuff, was looking at ways to convert energy straight out of the environment into electricity without using petroleum or things like that, but using resonating circuits like Nikola Tesla did. And those are the two areas that got me in trouble in the States. And then rather than shut me up any other way, I think they put me down here to finish my work and cut my funds off.
All right, but basically you still retain your citizenship, or do you not?
No, I gave that away back in 77.
So you are now an Australian.
Expedition.
You're an Australian citizen.
Yeah, well, I call myself a West Australian Texan.
But, I mean, technically you're an Australian.
Yeah, I'm technically an Australian citizen, Australian passport now, and it was done simply to keep my own government, to the American government, from jerking me out of here if I didn't want to leave Australia. Now it doesn't matter. They could do it anyway. But
well, you could have come back, though. I mean, there was a time when you could have come back to the States, but you obviously, for whatever reason, chose not to.
I did come back twice. I came back with a film crew one time and by myself the other. And certainly no one stopped me at Los Angeles when I came in, but we did pick up a two-man intelligence team that were fairly lowbrow types. I mean, they gave themselves away pretty early in the game, but they stuck with us like glue while we were there with the film crew. And there have been no formal things that said don't come home. They gave me a business permit, but I can't get I tried to get my U.S. citizenship back, and they wouldn't allow that. That was a very difficult road. So definitely that welcome mat has been removed.
And is it because of what what you're trying to tell everybody?
I think so. Art, I don't understand exactly what my value in their whole equation is, whether I'm a threat, an asset, or whatever. I've got to be honest. I know I'm still in their equation, still factored into Department of Defense and various other people. I'm probably not available on your police computers and things like that. I've had that checked. But in the intelligence game, I'm still there and current. And I just don't know whether they treat me as an asset, as collateral, or what. But I'm in there in the game for what we're talking about, UFOs, crowd control, information exchange and dissemination.
Maybe they have converted their thinking about you, Stan. Maybe they regarded you originally as a threat and now regard you as part of a sort of a conditioning process.
It's possible, Art. I mean, I've tried to avoid being used by anybody, and I guess living out here has been helpful in that respect because I'm so far out of the game that people don't talk to me that often. But now that I've gotten back on the internet, you know, a lot of strange things have happened on my computer. I can see when they're kind of diving in there occasionally to see what we're up to. I don't mind. There's nothing we're doing that's secret, but believe me, they do monitor what comes out of my computer.
Well, let me tell you another story that's circulating this morning. The
All right.
Federal Bureau of Investigation has just requested of Congress permission to freely monitor, they say, one out of every 100 phone calls in high-crime areas, no doubt using computers, craze, and so forth, to look for keywords, to look for people who are having conversations about crime or maybe Sandeo-type things that they can listen to.
Well, they're already doing it here in this country. I've got a number of friends that work for the phone companies that talk off the record to me, and certainly they watch my phones here and a lot of other folks, and they run tapes on them, and they do keyword searches. But they did tell me that they didn't just do it willy-nilly across the board with all phone calls, that they still had to target specific numbers because they didn't have the computing power to grab everyone's conversation. It's not quite that big yet.
Well, we're getting pretty close to that here, Stan. Stand by just a moment. We'll be right back to you. My guest is Stan Deo, all the way from Perth, Australia. Next hour, he's all yours. All right. Again, we're close to the top of the hour here. Stan, from Dean in Kauai, Hawaii, asking, regarding your ocean thermographs, can you update us on the hotspots? What are the hotspots? Are there any new or emerging locations you can report about?
All right. Well, we put it up on our webpage. I try to do that every day. As of 24 hours ago, there was a circular red hotspot or a bright yellow hotspot on our coding system, which means a significant one, about 500 miles west of Baja, California. That's the closest thing to America of immediate value. There were some minor heat areas building up off the coast of Mexico and Nicaragua. Japan had a minor shadow developing, as I recall, under the South Island. Definitely China, inland China, southwest China, right up to the sea edge there. That had a hot spot on it. And in the Philippines, we had a very confusing pattern 2 days ago of heat, bright heat spots there. And I, you know, they weren't as bright as one off California, but there were a number of them. And it didn't twig us what was going on there until I got the Navy sea wave height images in, which tell when the waves raise up anywhere on the planet. It's an image.
Yes.
And if you're aware, there's two hurricanes that have just gone through the Philippines and right inland and wiped the dickens out of the coast there. And what was happening was whatever was making this heat was producing the cyclonic or hurricane winds, and of course went right through that whole area. So we saw that.
Now that's down close to you. Can I ask you, Stan? I had a report that the typhoon, really, you guys down there have typhoons. The typhoon that was headed for the Philippines at one point had sustained winds of 180 miles an hour. Is that correct?
It could be. I'd have to check the links on that. On my webpage, I do have a link that goes into the whole American tornado and earthquake and hurricane watch. And you can actually plug in and get the track and velocity of it as every report comes in, plus some of the satellite photos of it.
All right. Are you aware that in Perth you're very close to the 19.5 degree angle that Mr. Hoagland talks about all the time?
Yeah. Look, I don't know about Richard's stuff. I've followed that. I've got his videos. I've studied his mathematics. And a lot of the things that are happening on the planet are outside the 19.5 north or south. Some of them are up around a 45 in Japan, and I'm not denying that there are a lot of things we don't understand about, his tetrahedral mass and things like that, but certainly I see things happening outside the areas he has specified.
Mm-hmm.
If we go around saying, look, I live at 19.5 degrees, I better cut my wrists or move, that's ridiculous.
No, I was just pointing it out.
I'm not being, I'm being flippant. There's so much going on at the moment that I'm getting a bit tired because we're working 7 days a week here. I'm getting about 4 hours sleep a night.
Stan, you're right about that. There's so much going on. It's the quickening. That's what I call it. Listen, we're at the top of the hour. I'd like the audience in the next hour to be able to ask you a question, so relax, and we'll be right back to you.
Okay, Art.
Stan Dale from Perth, Australia, right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired November 1st, 1995.
And my guest from the land down under, Stan Dale, Perth, Australia. Back to him in just a second. And the big question everybody's sending me on fax machine is, what's Stan's web address? So get a pencil, get a paper, get ready to write. It'll be the first thing we'll ask him, then we'll open the lines. Stan Dale, back in just a moment. Now, back to Stan Dale. Stan, tell everybody how to get to your web page, if you would.
To my web page. Well, for those of you that are on the net, it's the following address. http://www.init.au/ and then this next thing is a tilde. It's like a little Spanish tilde. And then my name, S-T-A-N-D-E-Y-O. Oh, all lowercase. All right, I'll read that back one more time. http://www.iinet.init.au/tilde/standeyo, all lowercase. That'll take you to my webpage, and that's where we'll link from there.
They're going to have to do something to fix that.
It's long, isn't it?
Yeah, there's got to be a better way. As I say, I think getting a link set up between your page and my page would be a good idea. At any rate, one other question, then I'd like to take some calls. Art, please ask how we can get... You did write a couple of books, right, Stan? They're called The Cosmic Conspiracy and The Vindicator Scrolls?
That's correct.
They're hard to find.
Well, look, down here they're not, but certainly if you have problems... you can mail to us here, or there is one crowd that are helping us in Illinois that you might be able to get it through, Nexus Magazine there. But our address here is P.O. Box 71, Kalamunda. That's K-A-L-A-M-U-N-D-A, West Australia, Australia, 6076. And either book is $30 U.S., and that includes the airmail to wherever you are, any place on the planet. We do have stocks, reasonable stocks of both at the moment. We just had to reprint the other one, the Cosmic Conspiracy.
All right, you better give that address one more time.
Okay, P.O. Box 71.
Right.
Kalamunda, that's K-A-L-A-M-U-N-D-A, Kalamunda.
Right.
West Australia.
Right.
In Australia, 6076. That's our P.O. Box. It's my personal one. And then, you know, we'll help you get the address that you need, or the book that you need from that address.
Right.
I'm just looking up the other thing here for you. The guys in Illinois that are helping us from Nexus Magazine, they're being quite good about this. They are in Kempton, Illinois, at Nexus Magazine. So it's NEXUS Magazine, Nexus Magazine, P.O. Box 177, Kempton, K-E-M-P-T-O-N, Kempton, Illinois, zip code 60946-0177. Now, they have the magazine there probably around $25 U.S. plus postage. I'm just guessing at the price. I think that's about what it is. If you want to fax them, they are on 815-253-6300, phone number 815-253-6464. I write for that magazine here, and I'm doing their electronic presence on the web here shortly. So there's a fairly close alliance between us. So you're almost writing straight to me if you write to them.
All right. All right, Stan.
That takes care of that, okay?
It does. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like you to take a few questions on the phones.
Great stuff.
All right, here we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Australia.
Hello
there. Going once, going twice, gone. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Australia. Hello.
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
Cannonburian. I had just faxed in a suggestion that you carry the book, but he just gave all the information how to get it since he had all the trouble.
Right.
And I also had asked on the fax, I haven't got your two books yet, your autograph books that I'd ordered. And,
they should be there shortly, sir. Do you have a question for Stan?
Well, I was just giving the suggestion of getting the books, but he gave it.
All right. Well, it's settled. Thank you very much. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Stan Deo. Hello.
Hi, Art. I'm calling from Eastern Oregon.
Yes, sir.
On KLBM. I appreciate, I heard Stan the first time he was on the show, and I appreciate, I think he mentioned that he was concerned about not giving out too much information where people would be upset or
yes.
Closing businesses and stuff like this, right? But, you know, you have Scallion now saying what he's saying, and tonight he's also saying that, it's just not being reported to us for whatever reason, and I would appreciate if he would just be, instead of just dancing around it, just be a little bit more specific, as specific as he can be.
Gee, it didn't sound like a dance to me. I thought it was very clear, but go ahead, Stan.
I've had a number of folks email me with that same kind of comment, and certainly my first program was a little bit cautious, mainly because I wasn't too certain of the technology or the equations I was using to derive the earthquake occurrences and when and where. I still am a bit cautious of them because they're running on statistical figures. Gordon Michael Scallion he's got access to things I certainly don't in the way he gets it. And if he says that he sees the quakes hitting in various places, well, I can't compete with that. I can only generally say, look, these areas are prone. They are about to go. It would appear statistically they're going to happen. And so mine is, in the end run, not as efficient as someone who can see into the future, if indeed he can do that. I know that from my biblical studies that there are prophecies for the times we live in that do say that there will be tremendous earthquakes in diverse places and famines and plagues of disease all over the planet when we kind of enter into the beginning of the millennial period that people speak of.
Mm-hmm.
So I speak in generalities in that sense. As specific as I can get, I put onto my webpage, which is the actual maps that I'm working with, and I try to do that every day so that you can see where the heat patterns are building up. And if I see something there that catches my attention, I put it on the picture or write about it on the webpage and say, look at this. This could mean something. And certainly I've done that in the last couple of weeks that I've been on the web. 2 days, 3 days ago, I put on the temperature changes for the planet and showing where I thought there was trouble. And in the last, 48 hours, a new typhoon threatens to wipe the Philippines. Mexico has a quake. Nicaragua has a quake. Puerto Rico has a quake. And two volcanoes are firing up over Vesuvius. And they had an earthquake over in the Balkans. Again, all this was stuff that you could derive from looking at our thermal charts. So I'm pleasantly surprised by this, but I don't know how more specific I could be.
I'm not sure. I'm pleasantly surprised by it. I'm unpleasantly surprised by it. When I picked up the information about Vesuvius and Etna that Scallion warned about, Stan, shock is the right word. In other words, I've always felt, you know, I talked to Gordon. He's a good friend.
Yep.
We spent a lot of time talking, and my opinion has always been if there is a real McCoy, Gordon is the one. Because
right.
he will talk to me in private with the same concern and worry and intensity that he talks on the air, or even more so, and we'll spend a long time talking about it. Now, the one thing I'll say of Gordon Michael Scallion is, again, it's the only way I know to put it. If there is a real McCoy of, you know, somebody you can see, he's the one. Modern day, he's the one.
Right.
And you reach and he reaches what seem like similar catastrophic conclusions through different means, and to me that is meaningful.
I guess it is, actually. I hadn't thought about it that way.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm thinking about it that way. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Australia. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Hello.
This is Leonard.
Yes, Leonard. What can I do for you?
Well, I'd like to ask him a question about prophecy, Bible prophecy.
All right.
If he's read in the 18th chapter of Leviticus, the correlation or the connection there is between the spiritual world and the material world, and when God says that the earth is going to vomit out its inhabitants because of the abominations and the wickedness that is surfacing on the earth.
All right. Stan, do you relate what you are finding scientifically? Do you correlate it to biblical prophecy at all?
Oh, no question about it. Yes, I do indeed. As I said before, I'm a confirmed Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ as my Savior. There's no question about that. But I have a head start on a lot of folks in that I nearly died back in 69 from a bacteria that I contacted. And I got out of my body for a short while and out there. And so I have an edge in that I know that we do live outside the body. And there is a world to deal with after we leave the body. And that's basically, if I had to do anything on your program or anything else from now until the time I die that was very important, it would be to say, people, you do live after you die out of this body. It is most important that you come to grips with how you're going to deal with that, you know, the pros and cons of it. Investigate that and get to the bottom of it urgently, because I think you haven't got very much time left.
Could we ask you about that experience? Exactly what did you experience?
Well, when I started to leave the body, I was in a great deal of pain. I was laying in a bed, and they had given me some Acromycin 4, which is an antibiotic at the time as an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I hurt so badly that I was moving my body to positions, actually were semi-like on a cross type thing, to get to where I didn't hurt so much. And as I was concentrating on this, I noticed that the sound in the room and in outside the building turned down like a volume knob, and I couldn't hear anymore.
Hmm.
And I thought, this is novel, and I became distracted from the pain by trying to figure out why I couldn't hear. And then I noticed I was getting tunnel vision, and the darkness was closing in around me, and the only light I could see was right up in front of me toward the ceiling, and it was getting into a small circle, and then a circle, and then it was blackness. And I couldn't hear, and I couldn't see. And I certainly wasn't aware of the pain at that point. And I was intrigued by the whole process because I seemed to be completely aware but not sensing in those areas. And I rolled out of my body, overlooking at my navel, and then as though there were a slow motion drop of water falling toward my navel, as it would have about hit my navel, I bounced right out of my body and straight through the roof. But when I went through the roof, it wasn't like seeing, you know, what was there normally, like, you know, trees and people around and that kind of stuff. It was into a smooth, silky body temperature blackness at great speed, moving away from the earth. And I saw my entire life, major events playing off to the side, my right side, in little theaterettes. And I would see myself dealing with people and how I hurt them or how they hurt me. And I would go back into their lives before that event or after that event. And before it was through, I understood everything that had happened to me and everything I'd done to other people, the pros and cons of it. My mind expanded. The intelligence or the ability to think was incredible. Imagine watching 60 television sets at once and understanding every one of the plots and being kind of ho-hum about it. That's how incredible it was. Then, as I moved toward the light out there, which was out ahead of me, way out there at great speed, I felt very calm and very peaceful, nothing like you'd have here on Earth. And I noticed that parts of my body seemed to be washing out. There was an invisible fluid I could feel that I was moving through, and it seemed to wash out chunks of my body, like I was made out of very fine wire mesh or something. And I'd look behind me back toward my body down below, and I would see puffs of, like, dust or mud flow out of my body. When it did, a negative emotion would leave me, like hate or greed or these kind of things, or envy. And I would feel those go. And by the time I was through being washed by this fluid, I was like a judge of myself sitting there thinking, wow, I understand all of this now. And I curled up to relax for the final trip into the great light out there. And then something caught me like a rope on my right side. And it spun me around. And it for the first time since I was out there, I felt a panic because I didn't want to go back to the body. I was great where I was. And I couldn't hold on, and I realized that there was some kind of a rope-type thing on my right ear connected to my body. So it was pulling me back. So I thought, well, I'll fall back into the body and somehow cut that rope, and I'll get back out here.
Mm-hmm.
So I relaxed and fell into my body, and it was an interesting experience. I didn't feel a thud or anything. I just kind of eased halfway into it with my right arm and my right leg and tried to grab this rope around my ear, and it turned out to be not a rope, but a phone by the bed ringing and ringing and ringing. And it was my mother, and I didn't know that. But anyway, it kept ringing, and I couldn't stop that phone, but I knew if I could knock it off, it would break the tie, and I could get back out there. So I held onto a ledge I could feel in the other world with my left leg and my hand. I was actually hanging in there while my right hand and my right leg were in my physical body, trying to move that phone off the hook. And it was like taking a leg of ham and holding it by the end bone and trying to move that accurately as a target because my body was like dead meat. Anyway, I got the phone off, knocked it off on the bed, and I heard my mother's voice saying, you know, Stan, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine, and trying to concentrate and hold on to the other world. And then she says, there's something wrong. You've passed before me like your grandfather did when he died. I saw you walk before me. And she was 30 miles away, right? So I said, no, you're wrong. I'm fine. And at some time in that conversation right there, my left leg and left arm fell out of that link I had into the other world, and I was back in my body, and I couldn't get back. Now, almost within 2 days of that, I was totally well and healed of whatever it was that was making me so ill.
Stan, hold on. That is one of the most incredible, absolutely incredible, graphically interesting NDE experiences I have ever heard. All right, Stan, we're just about at the bottom of the hour here, and I hope I've not led you astray, and I would like to ask you whether there's anything that, you know, that you wanted to cover that I've kept you away from, if there's any area that you really want to cover.
Well, Art, there's about 10,000 things, but I suppose there are a couple of questions here that I've had people write in. Ask me the next time I was on your show, would I please try to address them? We might try some of those if you want.
All right. Oh, all we've got time for is a teaser, so why don't you give me one of the best questions you've got right there, and we'll address it after the break here at the bottom of the hour. What is the question?
Okay. Well, there's a chappy here wanting to know about, well, in fact, I'll just read his question here.
All right.
He's from Texas, my old stomping grounds. First name is Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, he says, are we in for a believable and convincing global alien attack with devastating consequences as an attempt to consolidate political and military power as the powers that be move toward the New World Order? Do we stop there? Or do I explain that?
We stop there. And at the bottom of the hour, out of the bottom of the hour shoot here, you can explain it. Yes. All right, Stan, stay right there. My guest from Australia, Perth, is Stan Dale. Interesting question. In a moment, the answer.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 1995.
Well, I'll tell you, the world's getting to be a small place. From Gil, the following facts at 3:20 a.m. Art, there is now a link from your webpage to Stan Deo's webpage. So there it is, folks. It already exists. If you can get to my page, you can get to Stan's. Incredible. Really is a small world. And Stan Dale, Stan, it really is getting to be a small world, isn't it?
Well, since you let me read out my webpage address over the air a few minutes ago, 50 people have already dialed in and started pulling files down.
Yeah, see, there you go.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. All right, Stan, the question was, are we facing some sort of alien intervention, real or manufactured, I'll add that, in order to, in effect, bring the world together against some common enemy, real or imagined?
Yeah, it's like the Iron Mountain document where they said that it was a political purpose for governments to maintain political power by doing this. Certainly, I think the game started out this way in the 50s. I am not convinced now then that the so-called conspirators have control of the game they started. I do believe we're going to have an alien landing as such, and we're going to have in that alien landing, we're going to have good guys and bad guys to start with.
Let me be clear. You're saying this would be a real alien landing.
Yeah.
All right, the reason
let me ask you this.
The reason I ask, Stan, hold on a sec. The reason I ask is because we began the program today by your documenting or telling us that we have craft now that will do what, in essence, flying saucers do. In other words, we've got flying saucers, so in a way, you set it up to be asked. In other words, we've got the equipment to stage something like that if we wanted to.
Yep. Well, we've had it since the middle 50s, or at least in limping form. But something happened in 1958 around March. All across the world, there were over 100 universities and companies working on electrogravitics or anti-gravity type craft openly and publishing it. In that month, 1958, something stopped all of the publications across the planet. No one said it doesn't work. No one says we've succeeded. It just stopped. And at that time, by silence, there appears to be something that infiltrated our Earth-made sciences and research and took them over. And then years later, I've talked to people in security detail in the Middle East with the British, and they have told me about answering to a power group that they said could almost be alien. It was so far ahead of us, although the people they dealt with were definitely human. And guys with little thin briefcases would come to these various projects in West Germany and in Saudi Arabia and would say to them, here are the blueprints for the device or the process that we want to build. We want you to make an industrial complex capable of making these things. It wasn't research into how to make flying saucers. It was getting our people to make industrial complexes to manufacture these things.
Hmm.
Now, some group, whether alien or not, you know, after the mid-50s, had access to technology that was like textbooks. Now, how do we look at the Greek and Hebrew and Egyptian and Mesopotamian legends of the gods that came down from the sky and landed and dealt with us? I mean, it's the Erich von Däniken scenario. Hmm. How do we look at that and not call them what we would call them today as aliens? They are not part of our neighborhood, whether they be the creator or not. They are alien to our culture now.
Yes.
Now, I try to keep an open mind, and certainly I'm not your average Bible basher in that I try to get to the most ancient report and translate the language myself and hold and touch the things to try to get as pure a message as I can from our past. I've certainly been over the Middle East and dug in these sites and picked up bits and pieces of stuff and been in the caves and tried to figure out who these visitors to our planet were that probably were responsible for creating us. And my opinion is that it's not just some local neighborhood planetary group. It is bigger than Star Trek's Federation. It is a thing, an organization, that stretches across all the known universe.
All right. Well, let me pin you to the wall here and say you've given an opinion that, yes, this is going to occur. They are going to land. What are you basing that on? Why do you believe that?
Well, a couple of reasons. Certainly, biblical prophecy does say, watch out for visitors coming as messengers of light, claiming to be nice guys, but really being wolves in sheep's clothing. Sorry.
Right.
It does warn us of this time. I see so much conditioning going on at the moment in the press about extraterrestrials contact. Mm-hmm. The Roswell case is now coming to the forefront. Leaks are apparently coming out from various world governments that, yes, they are here. We have been lying. Military people are now breaking their security oaths and telling the story. It's true. They're here. I see a general conditioning that's waking people up to the alien presence being real, but in such a manner that people will be fooled by a good guy, bad guy routine where we have a group of aliens here on the planet now, which will appear to be good guys like us beating the bad guys, the little gray lizards or whatever, and we'll all think the good guys are our heroes and our salvation or whatever, and we'll do anything they say. When in essence the Bible says watch for a deception like this, because that first nice guy routine that hits you and saves you will be an imposter to the real creator that made you. So all I'm telling you is what is written there in the Bible, and believe me, my trip out of my body opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I'm telling you what I'm telling you now is probably the most important thing I can warn you of, a deception that is going to be so incredible that it would fool the brightest of our minds on the planet into believing it. Be very careful of what comes down from the sky very shortly.
Would it be your view that most will be fooled?
Yes. My position will not be a popular position, because now you stop and think about this. If we take the movie V, you know the series V that's on TV?
Sure.
Okay, we take that movie there. We had the aliens coming down dressed like us, you know, looking like us, but in reality, behind their sunglasses and their human-looking bodies were serpents.
Right.
That whole series was designed to tell you the same thing. Beware that those coming to help you and to be nice to you. And if you remember in the series, people who were against the aliens who were helping us, you know, the friendly aliens, were hunted down and were put in prison or killed because they were saying, look out, it's a trick, it's a trick. And that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in the resistance saying, it is a trick, do not be deceived. There is one greater to come.
I don't know if, you know, I don't know that I can believe all that, Stan, but I can certainly believe.
Well, it's just an opinion, isn't it, Art?
Yeah, I can believe there's a conditioning going on. There's
yes.
Absolutely no question about it. At times I wonder whether I'm part of it, whether you're part of it. I guess we are in a sort of a perverted way. We really are.
Well, we are, Art. In fact, I've often wondered, you know, whether to say anything more publicly or not, because I'm not sure whether I'm helping the situation or hindering it.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Yes, sir. Lane Conservative, Idaho. Pardon me if I pick out a fatal flaw to this theory here.
Sure, go ahead.
Why is the world, and particularly our own U.S. government, so bent upon its self-preservation as to not allow this information to be disseminated throughout the public to thwart an oncoming takeover of this planet? It doesn't make any sense to me why they would keep this under wraps and have all these people down as these aliens come down as far as abduction experience is concerned and have them shove all their little Mr. microphones up our...
Okay, we've got the idea.
Right.
In other words, why keep it secret?
Well, look, good question. The thing that you've got to realize is that for a long time, we were doing our own research up until, you know, the late 50s. If my suspicions are correct, we were taken over by some other group at that time. And after that point in time, I don't know that we've ever had control of our governments at a high level. Hmm. Now, if that is the case, then we were taken over a long time ago. It's just a matter of how this information is released to the public and let the public adapt to the new controllers of the planet. They may have been here since, 1958.
In other words, it may be their technology. Or at one time it was, and now is ours.
Well, it is. We started with our technology, and I think theirs has been there all along, but it's just simply taken over when we got to a point where we could be a threat. They simply just took it over and are now going to make this new world order. See, the biblical thing, what a lot of people don't realize, they even go to church, is this. It's not... how many times you go to church or Hail Marys or all this other kind of junk you do. It is a battle that occurred out in the heavens. They tell about it in a lot of other texts other than the Bible. A battle between good and evil, the sons of light and the sons of dark. And the battle is being finished here on earth in our lifetime, it would appear. And we've been warned by Hopi, we've been warned by Hebrew, we've been warned by heaps of stuff. Look out for those times because this battle is going to come down to you on the planet earth.
It does feel close, Stan. Hold on just a moment. We'll be right back to you. Back now to the land down under, Stan Dale. Stan, you have some incredible things to say. How much time do you spend just sort of mulling over how much to tell people?
Oh, I don't know that I spend a lot of time mulling that part of it over. I'm so busy collecting the information and trying to put out the reports that I do put out that I don't address that too often. It's only when you and I have a chat or there's been another radio station we've done up in Salt Lake City that
mm-hmm.
had kind of the same kind of results. And when I do that, I have to talk to a lot of people. I start to realize that they're listening out there, and then I think about it. The responsibility factor comes in because I'm not a prophet. I'm just an average person that's been put in some unaverage situations and exposed to some unaverage data. And I can only share with folks my views and opinions on these things. That's all. My concern has always been that when I share my opinions and I document them as well as I do, that people then assume that my opinions, based on the documentation, are the end, you know, full stop or period, that's it,
right.
A prophecy, and it's not exactly that way. From the Bible studies, I believe the Bible is 100%. Man's interpretation is up to a lot of question, and certainly, you know, I've had times where I've thought one way about prophecy that I would read and then another way 2 years later as I learned more, and I think that's healthy growth. If anything, I encourage people to look for answers to the problems today in the good book because it is there. And you may have to actually work at it by studying languages or finding people who are getting translations, new translations of the old data in the modern idiom because we've missed a lot by not retranslating, you know, since the King James days. there's a lot of very heavy coding that went on into old prophets' writings 2,000 and 3,000 years ago that deal even with Saddam Hussein and the coming Gulf conflicts and the Arab consortium that's forming and the Islamic Jihad that's going to move up through Turkey and into Bosnia and the destruction of Rome. All this is there in the prophecies. And today, more than any time in the history of man, we can sit and see these things happening,
Stan,
right under our nose.
Let me stop you for a second, Stan. There are these incredible peace talks going on now of all places at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton.
I know. I can't believe that.
And here we've got the presidents of these, some of them, frankly, to-be-indicted war criminals, I suspect, sitting down at a table at a place where it is said we have collected who knows what at Wright-Patt. I believe that to be the case. I do believe that myself.
Yeah, me too.
What do you think's going on there?
Well, look, obviously they're having a peace talk. The housing accommodations for the delegates is military and Spartan. I think they have cable TV in the rooms and Air Force Chow and whatever, but it is not your normal billet for heads of state and, you know, wonderful, relaxed talks.
Right.
There must be something else going on. Now, the interesting thing about the prophecies dealing with this day say that a false messiah or savior of the world will come, superpowers. He will emerge as a great peacemaker. Now, if someone can solve Bosnia, if someone can solve the Arab-Western world conflict, this person can write his own ticket. I don't care whether it's Uri Geller or Bob Geldof or Ronald Reagan or whoever they say is going to be. Whoever does this is going to be the man of the hour and the one we're told to watch out for, because it'll be solving the Earth's problems of peace and security, apparently.
Apparently.
And so going to Wright-Patt to Air Force Base, where they have all this stuff stored and the hardware that we're talking about. I mean, I've got reports that were printed, actual reports, not photocopies, reports out of Wright-Patt on the anti-gravity research that was being done there in 1955 and 56. You know, I've got the papers.
It was Mr. Hoagland's contention that they are going to take the parties in secret, and this is, believe me, the talks have gone deep secret. They're going to take these guys down on a long elevator ride somewhere, and they're going to show them something that will basically blow their Bosnian minds. And they're going to say, look, guys, either you get it together or else. And Richard Hoagland was frankly hoping that as the parties leave the peace talks, that cameras could get a good photograph of their faces, which he calculates will be somewhat pale and in shock. Well, we'll probably never see camera images like that, but is that what you imagine might occur?
I suspect so, and I have no other reason other than just suspicion. Richard may have access to more data on that, but look, it is highly unusual to have it at Wright-Patt. I mean, I can't fathom that. There's got to be something more to it. They've got to be showing them hardware or something that will tell them, look, guys, you either behave or
else.
This is what's going to happen.
That's right. It just seems so unlikely. You could think of Camp David. You could think of a million other places where they might take people like this and other atmospheres, whereas you say it wouldn't be Spartan. It would be a level or two above that. I mean, just so many other places before Wright-Patterson that many of us are suspicious. And
Art?
Yes.
One other thing I would like to remind you of is this. If the biblical prophecies are being interpreted properly by those of us doing it now, America is going to be virtually destroyed in our near future, from within and from without. There's going to be a terrible thing starting in the New England states of the United States, a civil or like war type thing, and also all the earth changes. America is going to be destroyed if we understand it correctly. And I'll say this. I am not a prophet. I am just trying to translate old writings into modern idiom so that we can understand what they say. And certainly, Nostradamus' writings on the Vatican being bombed are, I think, the same thing that the Revelation speaks of. And they speak about a religious political institution called Babylon.
Hmm.
And I might as well go ahead and disgrace myself all the way. When I was writing my book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, I was still in the writing of it back in 78.
Very quickly.
I fell very sleepily to the floor. I just couldn't stay awake in the middle of the afternoon while I was writing. I was working on the Great Seal of America at the time, trying to decode it.
And
I saw a vision of America being Babylon and the tool of Babylon with that seal. And I saw a vision, and I never wrote about it until later in my second book because it was just, people wouldn't believe it.
Stan, we have to hold it there. We're out of time. The show is over. So
okay.
I'm all the way from Australia, I'm going to give you the honor of saying good night, America.
Good night, America.
From the high desert, good night, America.